There's a lot of money being made by the inefficiencies of healthcare. Are we courageous enough to really transform the industry?
Today, I'm joined by two leaders who are working at the intersection of AI, healthcare, and real-world impact. First, Lisa Hershiser. She's a client relationship manager in Cognizant's healthcare practice. Lisa works closely with organizations who are navigating this complex, highly regulated industry to help them scale AI responsibly and align technology with real workflows, governance, and mission-critical outcomes. And Alan Fredrickson is the founder and executive chairman of Signature Performance. Alan leads a company that is operating at the heart of healthcare administration and public sector programs, including large government-sponsored initiatives where accuracy, trust, and accountability aren't optional, they're essential. Welcome, Lisa and Alan, to Stay Cognizant. Super happy to have you here today.
Thank you for having us join you.
Good to be here.
All right. Well, Alan, I want to start with you. Before we dive into our conversation today, talk to me a little bit about the relationship between our organizations. Talk to me a little bit about Cognizant as an AI builder and how that has been such an important partnership for you.
Yeah, well, you're right. It's a very important partnership. And how it began was, you know, healthcare has not necessarily been known as the most efficient industry out there. And it can be confusing and complex, whether you're a patient and a consumer of healthcare or a provider or whatever responsibilities and roles you play in healthcare. And having been kind of a back-end service company for the last 30 to 40 years that I've been in the industry and started Signature a little over 20 years ago, one of the ideas we had to birth the company was how can we make this more efficient and how can we consolidate and streamline, simplify? And one of the areas that was, we felt, too cumbersome and too hard was this whole notion of claims administration.
Mm-hmm.
And the process of submitting claims on behalf of a provider and paying claims on behalf of a payer. And so I tasked our group and myself to go and answer this question. If we were going to create a system that allowed for less cost, less human touch, more efficiency, greater accuracy, and much quicker, what would that look like? And so we spent probably close to 4 or 5 months developing what we called kind of a conceptual solution. And then from there, the second question was, okay, do we build it or do we buy it?
Mm-hmm.
And to build it, we assigned a couple of people to do an analysis of that. And we assigned 3 people to go out to the market and interview and examine and due diligence on healthcare claims systems and technology. We talked to about 8 or 9 organizations, most all of which was in the U.S., a couple of which were outside of the United States. And then we also had our own group present their concept and what it would take in order to build it, how much time, how much cost, so on and so forth. It was probably one of the more rigorous evaluations that I've been involved in my career. And that we ultimately decided that in order for us to get where we wanted to be and have the kind of impact we wanted to have, we engaged in conversations with Cognizant. And it was their platform, their system, their capability, their breadth, their reach, but also their interest in innovation and transformation. That and a cultural connection. And that was the beginning of this relationship. And from there, we've built some terrific solutions that are delivering, quite frankly, unprecedented outcomes in the healthcare industry. And so it's been a relatively short, less than 10 years, but we have accomplished a lot together in that 10-year period of time. And so we appreciate the organization, the people that we work with, how well they collaborate, their spirit of mission and values, focusing on the client. It just seems to be a really healthy, thriving relationship. And more importantly, it's having a big impact on healthcare.
Well, that is great to hear. And speaking of people who are foundational to this success, obviously, Lisa, you are foundational to, you know, what is happening with Allen. And you are also working with lots of other organizations in the healthcare space that are really grappling with this moment of taking AI from production to enterprise scale. What, from your perspective, what is the first sort of challenge in executing that, that healthcare organizations are underestimating?
I think it's really around context. They think a lot of times we can just come in, you know, bring in some pre-built use cases and just make them work within their organization. Mm-hmm. And we can do that. Mm-hmm. That's possible. But the real challenge is understanding the context of their environment, their data, what they're really looking to do with their outcomes, and really understanding their organization as a whole. Because if we build it around how their organization is structured, their governance, make it customized to them, that's where we really see the value. And that's where we're really able to scale. But I think that's the biggest misconception is how important context is mm-hmm. in these discussions.
That makes sense. Allen, I'm going to ask you, you know, obviously Signature Performance works exclusively in a space where you're dealing with human lives, you're dealing with human health. What has to be true before AI can actually improve performance without adding risk, without adding, you know, the type of risk that can impact lives negatively instead of doing the things that you're trying to do, like remove cost and create additional efficiency? How do you look at a system in that totality where you're able to balance the risk with the impact you're trying to make?
Well, like Lisa mentioned, healthcare is very local. And I think whatever you design has to honor and respect the mission, the values, the philosophy of each of the client organizations. And the only way to do that is to listen to them, understand them, and then build mm-hmm. from there. Mm-hmm. And that leads to an outcome that's unique to them and that serves their constituency and the purpose and their meaning as an organization. The second thing, then, is just to make sure it's filled with integrity. And integrity leads to trust and leads to confidence. And I think there's so much data and information out there. And in that is a lot of good information with great integrity, but also in that is information with gaps and accuracy challenges and so on and so forth. And in the healthcare business, when you're dealing with human lives, you want to be careful that the data and the information you have is indeed accurate and is timely. And we work really, really hard from a foundational standpoint to make sure that, A, we're listening to the client and we're building something for them that they not only feel is unique, but it is unique. Mm-hmm. And then secondly, building those initial bricks in that foundation based on information that we know has great integrity.
Building on that a little bit, you know, I've heard it said that AI strategy should start with value. You know, think about the technology after you figure out the value you're trying to extract from it for your own organization, for your customers. Tell me a little bit about what that means, both of you.
Yeah, so I would say, you know, from a value perspective, when you're looking at going into a large implementation like we did, I think what we had to really assess was, you know, what's the differentiator here? What is the client really looking to do? And, you know, understand that we can't just do something that's, you know, comprehensive without really understanding the client itself, without understanding what they're looking to accomplish, what their mission is, what their final goal is, what their client is expecting. So I think that's where you find the value is really fully understanding what their mission is. And, you know, when I look at our relationship, I mean, we really dove headfirst into, you know, new territory. It was a time when clients were just moving to the cloud. And they didn't decide to just move to the cloud. They were moving to the government cloud. Our first client moving into a government cloud. And, you know, to go into an implementation like that, we knew they weren't just going to use our products and our services, but there would be a lot of customization around that because of the type of industry that they're in. Mm-hmm. And so I think really understanding, okay, this is not going to be something standard. And we know that the mission that they're trying to accomplish is impacting, you know, some of the most at-risk patients, you know, to be able to do the kind of work that we were looking to do together and to do something so innovative, we had to understand what they needed, what those patients needed from us, what the providers were lacking, what, you know, the government client was trying to accomplish, understanding what that end value would be. Mm-hmm. And that is really, I think, what the recipe for success was.
Yeah, I think that's really well said. When I first got in this space, administrative costs represented 10% of the total cost of healthcare. Today,
I bet it's a lot higher now.
Today, it's 40%.
Yeah.
And just to give you some context to that, of the other high-income countries in the world, their administrative costs have increased too, from about 9% to about 11 or 12%. So they've experienced cost increase as well. But not like ours.
Not like us.
We've went from 8 or 9% to 40%. And when you think about a $5 trillion industry that is spending 40% of their money on administrative functions, I don't know an industry out there like it that can survive and be nimble and agile without being burdensome. I mean, think about the cost. And we all know, we all think healthcare cost is high today, and that's part of the reason it is. So some of the value we were trying to drive toward is how can we reduce the cost of doing things that really shouldn't be that complicated and as expensive as it is. It's complicated to the points we made earlier, but it doesn't have to be so burdensome and so costly like it is. So we've been able to reduce those costs in half in some cases compared to what they, and think about what hospitals and payers can do with those savings that are much more productive than funding administrative budgets.
You're talking about, you know, healthcare is known to be somewhat cumbersome. You yourself said at the beginning, it's known to be a little bit of a laggard. Lisa, from your perspective, looking across the portfolio of clients that you work with, what separates clients that are able to scale and do things like what Signature Performance have done from those that get stuck in experimenting or in proofs of concept, or maybe they never even get that off the ground? Maybe they stay stuck in use cases. What's the difference?
I think it's how we approach it, because if they come to us and, you know, they're looking for a proof of concept and, you know, we're, of course, willing to go with that approach. And, you know, I understand trying to start small, but I think if you really, you know, talk to them, and I think this goes back to context, right? Mm-hmm. Really going back and talking to them about what they're really looking to accomplish from an enterprise perspective. And if you're looking to start with that proof of concept, okay, what is that proof of concept going to accomplish for you? And then where is that getting us to the end state? But I think you really have to kind of push towards looking at an enterprise perspective. And I know that can be challenging. You know, it's a big investment. And you can, of course, do it, you know, iteratively. But I think really, you know, if you are really speaking to, you know, that individual organization's structure, the way, you know, their government or their governance is structured, you know, looking at how they are, you know, trying to approach innovation and just trying to work with them within the context of their own relationships, their own structure, I think that gives you the opportunity to really kind of push forward, because I do see that often. I mean, it's not often we have a company that's willing to jump in and, you know, move forward with something so innovative as we did, you know, several years ago, and especially with the high risk in a government contract. But I think one of the big differences is the relationship we built, the mm-hmm. personal relationship we built.
The alignment.
Yes, mm-hmm. absolutely. I mean, we spent a lot of time working together, a lot of time getting to know their company. And, you know, there was that trust factor. And I think, you know, that's something you had talked about, you know, and I think if you can get to that trust perspective, you know, and you say, I understand your corporate culture. I understand the mission you're trying to accomplish. We can help you get there. We can do it iteratively. But let's, you know, let's talk about it from an enterprise perspective, because if we're just going to, you know, wait for a proof of concept and wait for, you know, another year or so, you're not going to accomplish what you're looking for. So I think it all comes back to trust and context.
So, Ellen, when you think about scaling AI the way you have, how does it change expectations for leadership across your organization? You know, I think in the past, sometimes technology has been seen as the realm of like just the team who works on innovation or just the team who does IT. But now it's something that's in the hands of all of your leaders and all of the people who work for them. So what, how do your expectations change in terms of making sure that they are really taking the most advantage of this new way of doing work?
It's really a cultural change. Mm-hmm. This is not a technology project.
Yep.
This is cultural change, and it's hard to take on big work. That's a different level of effort. You're oftentimes trying to answer questions that have not been asked before and have not been answered before. And so when you think of the type of person that thrives in that kind of environment, my experience is they're in the minority. Incremental change is easier to achieve. It's easier to get buy-in. Transformational change, not so much. So you really got to be able to answer the question why quite well. And so when people can understand the impact it can have, then they can rally and get energy and inspired around an effort. And then if they know they're part of something that truly is going to be an industry-leading, industry-benchmarking thing, most people want to be affiliated with a project like that. You know, smart, talented people want big projects. They want to make an impact.
So let's talk about this. Let's talk about these big projects. Let's talk about agentic systems. Let's talk about the way that that is changing workflows within Signature Performance. And let's also talk about, you know, how it is or is not actually replacing people, because I think we know there's a lot of fear. There's a lot of, you know, questions about what this technology means for the workforce. So talk about what that looks like inside Signature Performance today.
Well, our approach, and we're still learning, you know, it's, but our approach has basically been, let's get the people involved in, first of all, what is this technology?
Mm-hmm.
What does it do? This is something we're not familiar with. It's new. And most of what we're getting familiar with is what we read or what we hear, but not necessarily what we experience. And so it feels foreign. And anything that feels foreign, there's going to be a little level of anxiety and anxiousness about it. How's it going to affect my job? Am I going to have a job? Is my job going to be same as, different than? And so what we try to do is have the people partnered with Cognizant to help help us understand, what is AI? What is agentic, right? What is all of these buzzwords that's coming around that 10 years ago weren't even in our lexicon?
Right.
And then we ask, how can we adopt this into our business? And what kind of functions do you feel this could enable us to do better and more accurately, more timely, less costly? And when people understand it, they understand the why, then all of a sudden the threat and the foreignness of it begins to dissipate. And then energy begins to build. And now people are saying, and the actual experience we're having with Cognizant is, you know, we've always tried to take pride in hiring highly talented people. They now feel like they're being utilized for their full potential, closer to their potential than being, think about the opposite of that.
Right.
They're not using me as much as I could.
Right.
I could do so much more. Well, now they are. Now they're operating at this level that they always maybe fantasized or thought they could do, and now they're doing it. And so, you see, that's one of the beautiful things of adopting this kind of breakthrough technology, this artificial intelligence, and then to be able to work with teams like Cognizant and the team at Signature that works with Cognizant that embrace and actually enjoy taking on work like this. Yeah, that's a cultural thing. And it's like this gives us energy, and the threat is really no longer there. Now people are elevating, they're making more money, they've got bigger responsibilities, their careers look like it has a higher ceiling versus a lower ceiling. You know, look, there's gonna be people implications, don't get me wrong. I think people are gonna need to adopt new skills, learn new things, but haven't we all had to do that over the course of our career? I mean, I look at how I used to function when my career first started out, and I barely have any of those elements that are still with me today, and have added on new and different ways of doing things. But I think if you respect people to teach them the why and educate, and we learn along with them, then I think this can have a much greater opportunity to succeed.
Lisa, talk to me a little bit about the technology side. When you're thinking about setting up an agentic network with a healthcare client, you're thinking about these agents that are going to perform some level of tasks autonomously. Sometimes they're going to have, you know, escalations to humans. What are the foundational things that you need to put in place from a data perspective, from a governance perspective? How do you approach that?
So I would say, you know, there's a few pillars that you need in place. You know, governance architecture is a big component of that. You know, you need guardrails in place for agentic systems. You need to embed those into the workflows of those systems. Audit trails, transparency, those are all part of those, you know, foundational elements that you need. Mm-hmm. And in terms of workflow intelligence, it's really understanding what actually moves across the enterprise. And really that kind of comes back to that context, you know, understanding that client's data. And so, you know, without having that understanding of their data and what they're trying to accomplish, you know, you're not going to be able to set that up for success. You know, third is really data readiness. That's making sure you're working with clean data, making sure you've scrubbed that data. Because, you know, if you're not, then you're just amplifying the issues that are already there within
right.
the data.
Right.
So making sure you have that in place. I would say those are the kind of segments that are crucial to, you know, really getting stood up from, you know, the ground level perspective.
Where have you already seen a measurable impact? Are there numbers you can share, 20% greater efficiency? Like, how is this actually impacting the work that happens every day inside your organization?
Just from a baseline standpoint, hospitals typically wait anywhere from 50 to 70 days to be paid for services that they provide to a patient. Most of those payments come from third-party payers, insurance companies, Medicare, Medicaid, payer like that. The biggest reason for that delay is because of the process that has to happen in order to have confidence in making the payment, right? Does the insurance plan cover those kinds of services? Does that have limitations on cost up to a certain amount of dollars, so on and so forth? We've got claims that that providers are being paid literally in 2, 3, 4 days. Mm. It's actually processed in a matter of hours in many cases, minutes
wow.
in many cases. So our clients, our hospitals are receiving payments in days. Every once in a while, it'll be a week or two, but rarely, very rarely is it anything over 30 days. And when you're accustomed to not getting paid for 50, 60, 70 days, now all of a sudden you're getting paid in 3, 4, 5, 10 days. Imagine the difference that makes to the provider and to the hospital.
Yes.
Imagine the difference that makes to patients. Sometimes when payers don't pay claims quickly, then the ultimate responsibility is on the patient. And if they're not paying timely, then that can affect credit ratings and credit reports and credit integrity. So these things have ripple impacts. And so we're paying them quicker, and we're paying them probably at about 25 or 30% less than what the cost was before. Much more timely. Before, about 50 to 55% of claims got through without a human touch. Today, we're what we call in the business auto adjudicating over 90% of the claims without a human touch.
Wow.
Accuracy is really high, over 99% accuracy. Accuracy before that was typically in the 80s. So those are not small incremental differences. And these are hundreds of millions of dollars that are being saved annually.
So you talked about auto adjudication. How have you determined where a human has to stay in the loop?
Yeah, first of all, from a training standpoint, making sure, Lisa mentioned, making sure that data is squeaky clean. Once those things go off the guardrails, you've got problems because this stuff operates so quickly.
Yep.
Something that can be a degree or two off can all of a sudden, in a matter of hours, impact tens of thousands of claims and individuals. Just like it can be a great benefactor, it can also it can also mess things up in a much faster way. And so I think keep people closely involved, monitoring these really high experts, right? Which is what we hire, and that's what they come on board for. And now they're able to do that kind of work more regularly. Quality control, really high monitoring, uber amounts of monitoring, both technologically, but also through key experts and people.
And that ties back into workflows that we talked about, you know, and how we set up those workflows. And because you obviously want to make sure you're auto adjudicating as much as possible, but you also know that you have to set it up. So if there are some outliers out there, that they get moved out and those are manually reviewed. And so you have to keep the human into it. There's no way you're going to auto adjudicate every single claim. There's always going to be some outliers. And so making sure you have that workflow set up. And really from the beginning, like you were saying, you know, you're working with clean data, but you also know even in that clean data that there are going to be some claims that you're going to have to touch. So there's always going to be that human element. And really, you know, one of the questions you had asked is how do you, you know, ensure that, you know, people feel secure as you move to these, you know, automated technologies. And, you know, when Signature took on this contract, brought us on, one of the challenges was the government agency they worked with. You know, there was anxiety.
Yeah.
There was people working on that system and they thought, what's going to happen to my job? And what actually happened was as we auto-adjudicated, as, you know, things became so much more efficient. We, you know, put agentic AI in place. They were able to reallocate those resources to patient-centered care. So now you had hundreds of resources. Instead of losing their jobs, they moved from doing these really manual processes to doing things that impacted the patients directly. And these are patients that are very high at-risk patients. So it was, you know, transformative for the agency we worked with. And really, you know, as Alan talked about, people get inspired by that, you know?
Yeah,
so when they, you know, when the people in Alan's organization, our organization, you know, when we're, you know, building these things out, customizing them. And we see that, you know, now these patients, you know, they're able to get more in-person care. They're getting more face-to-face. They're getting, you know, the provider network is growing. And that was another outcome. You know, the providers, now they're getting paid timely. They're more willing to participate in that network. They're more willing to see these patients. They have more time to see these patients. They're not dealing with as much of the administrative burden. So I think, you know, it all circles back to, you know, that the outcome ends up being that people get to actually do work that's more meaningful to them. And I think that takes away the fear of it, as Alan had talked about.
With all that's going so well and all the positive impact you've seen from adopting this agentic enterprise, what keeps you up at night? What are you worried about?
Well, I'd like to have us take what we've built and have it really truly be the model across healthcare. We're having some really great outcomes on some individual client standpoints, but healthcare is a large industry. You know, there's over 5,000 hospitals across the country and countless numbers of clinics and ancillary care facilities, so on and so forth. I think one of the things that concerns me a bit is, are we courageous enough to really transform the industry? There's a lot of money being made by the inefficiencies of healthcare. And we, you know, I've been involved in many conversations where somebody will respond and say, you know, that's great. That's exactly what we should do, what we need to do. But there's no way I can support that, because that would knock off 30% of our revenue. Mm-hmm. And my leadership would absolutely probably not support that. Well, see, that's self-interest. Those are economic interests. That's getting in the way of providing healthcare as efficiently and as effectively as we possibly can. And I really feel like healthcare needs to return to being one of the most worthy humanitarian acts of service. And let's get back to the focus of what is healthcare all about. It's about healing. It's about celebrating beautiful things like a birth of a new child. It's about mitigating worry and concern of a diagnosis that perhaps nobody would have wanted to be on the receiving end of. It's putting people in a position where they can focus on their well-being and get all of this noise and this unnecessary non-value-added processes and complexities where we can out of the way. And if there needs to be complexity in healthcare, let's have it be clinical complexity, where we're trying to have the right research, the right medication, the right therapies, the right science that's applied to these things. But let's not be burdened by administrative things that are controllable. And we just need to have the courage to say, this is enough, let's fix it. And one of the things I applaud this effort with Cognizant and Signature is these two organizations are demonstrating bravery and courage to disrupt an industry that needs disruption. And I have been warned by very high levels of leadership in healthcare leadership in the country about, be careful. You're gonna upset a lot of people by the work you're doing. And is this worth this at this stage in your life? And you don't need to be doing this. And I said, oh, yes, we do need to be doing this. And I think that's one of the things that has concerned me, and that is the difficulty of getting people to sign up for this. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that excites me is this is exactly an example of the things that need to be done to fix this industry and make it be. I want America to be the leading model of healthcare in the world, and we need to return to that. And we've slipped from that position in the last couple of decades. But guess what? There's no other country that can return to that position faster if we set our mind out to it. And so I'm proud of the courage these two organizations have demonstrated. The leadership of the organizations to embrace it, to support our work. And we're just beginning. We've made some nice impact, but we've got a lot of work to do. This is a big industry that we need to convert, and we're well on our way. And now we've got some case studies and use cases that we're able to tell the story of what's happening. And guess what? Signature and Cognizant's not getting too wrapped up with the successes. We feel good about them, but we're more wrapped up in what we need to do in the future. And we're focusing on that every bit as much as anything we've done to date.
Project 5 years from now, you've gotten the naysayers to sign on. You've continued to, you know, find new and innovative ways to use AI to maybe take some of the cost savings that AI brings to innovate in net new things. What does healthcare look like in the United States? And what role is AI playing in the model of the future?
Well, because of AI and process redesign and automation, you've got doctors that are spending most of their time every day with patients and on patient care, and not half their time. You've got doctors that are saying, I am not going to retire early. I'm having too much fun. I'm having too much meaning. I'm impacting patients' lives like I've never impacted patients' lives. How in the world could I walk away from this now? You've got young people who are saying, I want to go into the medical field, the medical industry, and we need young people to sign up. We're living longer. We need more providers, more nurses, more physical therapists, clinicians than we've ever needed. And I think it becomes an industry that returns to those things that drew great people, great minds to it many, many years ago. Some of this stuff is driving people out of the industry. It's causing burnout. It's causing fatigue. Work is becoming a grind. And the number one thing that drives people out of a profession is when it becomes a grind. Mm-hmm. It becomes too hard. It steals the joy and the meaning. And we want to replenish that. These days are not that far away, in my view. I truly do believe they can happen in the next 5 and 10 years. And I'm excited about I call it a movement, because I think that's what it is. And everybody can relate to healthcare. We're all a consumer of it at some point, or we know somebody who is. And we understand how vulnerable and how important this is at some points in our lives, about people we care deeply about. Let's have this function at its very, very highest level so we can have the confidence in the system that we want, that we can be relieved and focus on well-being. And we deserve that. And we're smart enough, and we have enough resources as a country to be able to achieve this. And then think for a moment, what if we were able to do that really well within our own borders? But what if we were able to take that across the world and take the efficiencies and all of these good things to other countries? They may not have the exact same policy of healthcare that the United States has, but they've got all of these issues that we're dealing with within the states. That's what we have in common. I'm excited about the impact this will have on humanity.
Lisa, last question. If there's one thing, one principle, one ideal that you wish healthcare leaders would think about as they start their journey in AI, what would you think it should be?
I would say they really need to start by thinking of the enterprise impact of it. You know, they're thinking, you know, I want to change one thing. I would say I'll use a contact center as an example, because that's where we're really seeing more rapid adoption. You know, that's where we're seeing, you know, interactive voice. We're seeing next best action. And, you know, if you think about it and say, you know, I want to implement AI, and how can I impact my enterprise as a whole? So even if you were to start in your contact center, you're looking at, you know, these agents that are working now and, you know, a lot of times doing a lot of tedious work, having to go back into different records and such. You know, you implement this functionality in there, they're able to pull up the patient's information, mm-hmm. you know, at a glance, look at what they need to find out about this patient. So the patient's less frustrated, and they're able to take next best action and say, okay, now I can help you to get this appointment scheduled. I can help you to, you know, get this to the pharmacy, you know, I can make sure that, you know, you're receiving the next best care that you can receive. Instead of saying, oh, I'm going to call, I'll call the agent, they'll send me to another agent and say, contact this contact center, and then they will go and make your appointment for you. And then you go to the next contact center, and they're the ones that helps you with your prescription. You know, if you're able to handle all of that within one contact center, the impact that it has on your organization as a whole, you're having fewer agents having to do, you know, the same role across multiple contact centers. You're able to take those people and put them in other areas in the organization, really taking that upskilling and giving them the training they need to do, you know, impactful things in other areas of the organization. You're impacting the patient, because now there's less frustration. You know, they're calling these contact centers. We see often, you know, that frustration leads them to not call the next contact center and say, oh, I don't feel like, you know, dealing with another wait to get an appointment. And so they end up in the emergency department. And so you're driving down the costs by fewer emergency department visits. Mm-hmm. You're impacting your organization because now, you know, you have the ability ability to transform care, you know, just within the contact center alone. And, you know, the way that can ripple through the organization, you start there and then to be able to take that and say, okay, we take that same model and let's look at, you know, how we can transform
other areas.
Other areas, yes. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, if you can really just look at an enterprise level and say, okay, I might start in one area, but how is that going to impact the next? And, I think this is something we talked about earlier today. It's not just the next, you know, action, but the next three actions, right? And so I think that's what you really need to look at is, I'm not just going to do this to impact the contact center, but I'm going to do this because the impact of that will have a ripple effect in these other two areas down the road. And so I think if you can look at it from that enterprise perspective and, you know, tying that all back to context, which we've talked about, you know, really understanding the context of that organization, what they're trying to achieve, and helping them get to that third action, right? Helping them to see the vision of that third action.
Well, it sounds like we're talking about not just healthcare evolution, but healthcare revolution. This has been a very inspirational conversation. Alan, Lisa, thank you both so much for being my guests today.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
Thanks for the good work you're doing.
Thank you.